Jeff, it sounds like you're ready to go for it. You're going to go into the clouds. You feel the odds are on your side of the ledger. Let's look at the worst case. You're going at 6,000 feet. How long are you going to be in this potential icing situation, and how badly iced up might you be when you come out the other end?
You don't know until you actually put yourself in those clouds. And I'm flying a 172. I have very limited de-ice capability. I've got pitot heat. I've got a really lame little window defogger. And that's about it, right?
And how much ice do you need to ruin your vision capability?
To ruin the vision capability, not much at all. To really be a major lift issue on that plane, I've got a little bit more leeway, and I got lots of places where I can see it forming. You know, this really fits into everybody's sort of personal comfort and experience level, and I would not fault anybody for saying I will never go into a cloud that might be below freezing. And you got to think, too, I'll do a little aside here, it's minus 7 at 8, right? It is probably, just on a normal lapse rate, somewhere around minus 4, minus 3 in the top of that cloud, unless the temperature changes quite a bit when I enter the cloud, which can happen, and we've all experienced that. I may hit the top of that cloud and suddenly discover that it's 0 at the top and it goes above freezing almost immediately when I go into it. So I don't know. So like you said, there's a worst case scenario. So to my mind, no matter what I'm flying, whether it's, you know, a simple airplane that has essentially no de-icing equipment, or it's a Ficky aircraft, right? Flight into known icing. To me, icing comes down to two things: duration of exposure and rate of accretion. And no matter what equipment I have, the equipment changes the rate of accretion. I can deploy boots, or I can use TKS fluid or whatever it is to slow how fast things accumulate on the aircraft, possibly to zero on the protected areas. But nonetheless, that's what it's doing. And what that allows is for a greater duration of exposure, right? So what I've done is tried to set up a situation where I don't know what the rate of accretion is going to be, but I think it's going to be small based or zero based on what information I have. It's not that likely. And if it does happen, the severity is very, very low. So then I'll take the thing in my control, which is duration of exposure. I'm going to minimize my duration of exposure. And if I have to come down 1,500, 1,700 feet per minute, that's what I'll do. I've got 3,000 foot ceilings below, and I've got above freezing temperatures. If I have to fly around to let it all come off before I land, that's what I'll do.
I would add a third factor to that, Jeff, and that's your escape route. It's warm underneath. And that's a very important factor here. I wouldn't want to address this situation if it were above freezing all the way to the ground.
I'm pretty concerned about launching into potential up to 45% chance of ice and occasional severe, you know, moderate or greater severity, even just occasional in an airplane, anything that's not ice protected, but certainly like that. What concerns me even more in this particular case is that you took off with a plan that assumed you were going to be able to descend visually between the clouds. The clouds got worse. Conceivably, the icing potential got worse as well, and you have no way of knowing until you expose yourself to it.
And fair enough. In our pilot's defense and my defense, the scenario as it's laid out, and I say this because I laid it out this way on purpose, the forecast icing product has these chunks of potential, and one of them is that 15 to 25, and another is that like 25 up to 45, and there might be a 35 in there. I don't remember off the top of my head. But the bulk of it is in that 15 to 25. So really the exposure is 15% to 25% likelihood with essentially zero likelihood of moderate or severe. So it's all in the trace and light. So to your point, you would be uncomfortable about 45% with occasional moderate to severe. So would I, and I wouldn't do this. I purposely set up this at the very edge of where I felt comfortable with that zone. You know, I don't think we need 50% likelihood.
And yet that 45% and moderate or greater ice did appear in the forecast also. Very small chance, but it's still there. And
agreed.
Conditions are worse than forecast.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point, is that the conditions – the clouds are worse than forecast, or is the icing worse than
forecast? We have no way of knowing whether or not the ice is worse or better than forecast.
Fair enough.
Well, I think I I think here a reasonable pilot, at least in my mind, if I were to consider myself a reasonable pilot, I would not view this as a substantial likelihood of an icing problem descending through that what amounts to 3,000 feet of cloud. Now, that's got to be structured. That whole issue in terms of how to get down is another issue. I would tend to go with your solution of talking to ATC and getting an uninterrupted descent, but I would probably request pilot discretion on that so that I could descend to the top of the clouds and then pick my spot where I'd go to 3,000 to minimize exposure on that.
Yeah, and that's exactly what a pilot's discretion – you can do it at whatever rate you want to do. You're not tied to the suggested rates and then level off, you know, 500 feet per minute at the end or something. You're looking at 3,000 feet of clouds that you got to go through. If you could do 1,000 feet a minute – 3 minutes exposure and you're out the bottom is probably not unreasonable. I'm not sure how much you'd pick up during that. But I would definitely go with the PD because that allows you to pick it. And you may have to do some, as you indicated, you may have to do some negotiation. Mm-hmm. It may be a turn out to a heading or something where they're going to let you do this. And it may be out to the northwest where you're out over the water heading away from the airport for a while so that you can get down below it. And then turn around and back.
I think I would tend to agree with Jeff's call on not doing the PD simply because more information is better. He's informed the controller what his issue is and why he needs to get down uninterrupted. And I think that just gives the controller a little bit more information if he needs to talk to him again. He's already cleared some communication.
If I was issuing, you would ask for something, I'd say pilot's discretion, maintain 3,000.
Okay.
And it's up to you to figure out how you got to do it. I got the information that I need. I know that you need a dive bomb, but it's still going to be a discretionary clearance.
I think from a planning standpoint, this would be a totally different scenario also if the temperatures were at or near freezing at the surface and you had no ability to get rid of that ice in the event
it
came.
Or you didn't have the room.
You didn't have the room. I think this would be a totally different scenario.
Jeff, playing devil's advocate here, let's look at, you decide to go through and you do ice up and you do have problems and you do need to declare an emergency. And now you're sitting there talking to your friends from the FAA and they say you had other options. Why did you intentionally put yourself in the clouds when there was certainly some, it may not have been high, but why did you choose this option when you had VFR options available to you?
It's an excellent question. I feel that the choice is defensible because the risk is manageable and low. And even in the same known ICE legal counsel interpretation, they talk about what will happen if there's an enforcement action based on this. And I called it up. It's right in front of me. But at the very end, it says the FAA will specifically evaluate all weather information available to the pilot and determine whether the pilot's pre-flight planning took into account the possibility of ice formation, alternative courses of action to avoid known icing conditions, and if ice actually formed on the aircraft, what steps were taken by the pilot to exit those conditions. I feel like this plan, I can stand up to that and say this was reasonable. Yep, there were other options. There always are on a flight. I felt this was a viable option. It didn't pan out as planned, but I'm here talking to you. So clearly, I took some precautions that kept me safe.
Okay. Well, as Bob mentioned, there were some other plans. The pilot saw a VFR trip to Bellingham as being possible. And with the 3,000-foot ceiling at that point, you could have the pilot could have taken off after clearing customs at Bellingham, gone VFR underneath the clouds to destination. You have the added stop less convenient to be able to do that. But manage the risk to a level, but that would be even a better way, in my opinion, to manage the risk. Take that VFR hop, clear customs, stay VFR underneath the clouds all
perhaps
the way.
Perhaps if that had been done initially.
That's my point.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I tend to agree with that had the forecast for Seattle been overcast, right? Based on the information the pilot had at launch, I think going to Seattle, that made a lot of sense. It didn't pan out that way, but – now you've already set yourself up with customs. I mean, you can't change that once you've taken off.
They are humorless people after 9/11.
But you also had 2.5 hours of sitting there where you could have been calling flight service and checking the weather, it should not have been a surprise when you got to Seattle that there was a solid undercast and you flew over Bellingham. There was plenty of opportunities there to stay updated on the weather.
So I'm going to toss this question across the table to Bob. Bob, what do you think would happen if you had to change destinations and go land at Bellingham? The FAA thinks it's great, but what about the U.S. Customs?
The FAA would think it's great. The customs people would not think it's great. First of all, you don't have landing rights there. You filed an APIS for another airport. You didn't turn up there. That's number one. You turned up somewhere else unannounced. And who knows if there's staff to handle you even when you land there, which is another issue. So I would not be real hot on that option. If you're crossing the border, you should try to be pretty certain that you're going to turn up where you're supposed to at the appropriate time, no less, and file your EAPIS accordingly on the internet and give the folks a call. Be sure you check in with them before you leave that you are in fact coming and everything is in order and you've got approval.
Jeff, we have the luxury here sitting around this table of changing some of the variables, so I'll just ask you this. You can justify, rationalize, defend your decision to go through the clouds, you know, once you're in the position you are. If you had known about these conditions prior to takeoff, would you have launched in these conditions and, you know, put yourself in this scenario intentionally?
So it's an excellent question as well, and I have to split it in two. If I was coming across the border and I knew I had that complication and it was overcast in Seattle, I would have filed for Bellingham because that's just way too many variables, right? If I was just flying to Seattle and it was overcast, if I believe I could go through the clouds when it was accidentally overcast, then I should believe I could go through those clouds and have it be defensible knowing it was overcast. Would I do it? Hard to say. I would be on the fence. If the weather was any better than this, because this is right at my sort of icing limit, I probably almost certainly would. If it were any worse, I certainly wouldn't. But this is right on the line. So probably, but I can't say that with certainty.
And, you know, we don't live in a black and white world. We'd all love, you know, I mean, wouldn't it be perfect if it was a black and white world? But, you know, there's a lot of shades of gray here. And, you know, safe versus legal, legal versus safe. And we can all, you know, we know countless cases of something that is, you know, safe but not legal and legal but not safe. And you're in a situation here where you really have to, you know, risk management and balance several issues. But I think we all agree. The one thing we all agree on is you're heading in the right direction to accomplish this. You're heading to a better place. You know what the temperature is down there. That part is not unknown. It is above freezing, below, and that's where you're going. And so it's not like, you know, the risk is very, very low. I have to say that. I may or may not agree to penetrate that, but I think your action is defensible. And once again, it's not there for everybody. I mean, if you think this is more, you know, risk tolerance than you're willing to accept, there are other options available to you.
Bob? This is really about personal minimums, among other things here that we're talking about today. If your tolerance is zero, then it's zero.
But another option, another point that before you initiate that descent, you could also ask ATC what, if anybody's, get a current pyrep. You can get a pyrep that's a minute old and find out what the actual conditions, because area like that, there's airplanes going through the clouds all the time.
So let's say you ask for a pyrep, and you get a pyrep that's 3 minutes old of light ice accumulation from 3,500 to 5,000 feet. Do you continue to the descent?
What kind of airplane?
In this one. Yeah, what kind of airplane is it?
You know, 747.
All right, a Cessna 182, something fairly similar. Okay.
Well, right. It's a piece of information.
Okay. So at that point, do you continue your descent or you do turn around and go to Bellingham and face customs there?
You're asking me personally, or you're asking the table?
That's just a rhetorical question.
Yeah, it's a good question, you know, and this is how much does the customs thing factor in?
Yeah.
You said it was a 182? Yeah, I still had customs, personally. All right, I'm going through because I don't want to deal with customs. I still feel like the risk is low, and even though now there's definitely some icing, I still would rather deal with the FAA on it and say I was safe.
I agree with you, Jeff.
And the 182 guy is in trouble now, too.
I was just following him.
Cirrus with no knocks. How about
that? Yeah.
Okay.
I think, Jeff, that it's a reasonable risk, even though this fellow has reported some light icing. If you've got the clearance to get uninterrupted to 3,000 feet, you've got the temperature well above freezing down low, I tend to agree with you.
Icing is one of the real challenges we face as pilots. I put icing and thunderstorms in the same vein. They both can bring down any airplane, any pilot. And as a result, we need to clearly understand them. We need to understand what they're about and their consequences that they involved. And in this case here, I think we've done that, and I think that you made the right call.